We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
NBA Most Valuable Player, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Giannis trailing the lob. Giannis Antetokounmpo.
1 second.
Hey there, welcome to the Eurostep Podcast Network. This is a collaboration between the Win in Six Podcast and the Eurostep Podcast, coming directly after the Bucks evened up their Eastern Conference semifinal series against the Brooklyn Nets, a 107-96 victory from Milwaukee. A lot of takeaways from this game. First and foremost, of course, is that, you know, despite the chaos and panic, and I'm not ridiculing those emotions at all, but all of the negativity, again, deserved negativity following games two and even game three as well, the Bucks are right back in this thing. Still no home team is lost. It's an even series, and now the Bucks seem to have maybe the upper hand with Kyrie Irving joining James Harden on the injured list. Adam, Rohan, did I introduce you guys?
No, we were just ducking from the strays there.
It's me too, though.
It is.
It's definitely me too.
Yeah, you know, you conveniently miss, you know, the podcast where Rohan screamed and startled at all the listeners.
Increasing heart rates out of here.
So I wanted to address, I'm joined by Adam McGee of the Win in Six Podcast and Rohan Kadi of the Eurostep. I'm Ty Windisch of the Eurostep Podcast as well. Wanted to address some comments from the last podcast. First, Adam wonders if I listen to the pods if I'm not on it. That's a shot without saying anything.
It was a shot.
Exactly. So, I put it in the DM that I was going to answer your slander, and you sent a GIF like, "What did I do?" You made it sound like big time tie over here. I don't have time to check out the pod. Well, I did listen. Thank you very much.
This is exactly the reason why I asked that question, was because big time tie. And how often have you not been on your own podcast?
Not
over the years.
It's pretty rare.
See, we've given you some flexibility now, but it's good to know that you tuned in.
I'm tuned in. I have nothing for Rohan. Absolutely correct that I thought I could get away with sneaking in that I never truly lost faith in Brook Lopez. We all know it was gone.
You're talking about Adam, like saying like, oh, you're not saying I listen to the pod. Are you assuming the same thing about me then when you're making those comments that I'm not going to listen to the pod?
That I thought maybe I could just sneak one by.
Not getting past me here.
Too crisp. Okay. Let's talk about the basketball game now. I think the place to start with this game and this point in the series is, are our thoughts changed on, is this a real series the Bucks can win now? And if so, is it only because of Kyrie potentially missing, you know, maybe the rest of the series? We just don't know. It looked like a pretty severe ankle sprain. We don't really have an update on timeline. We also don't have one on Harden, so I'm not expecting exact news on that anytime soon from Brooklyn. But, you know, both of these guys could miss the rest of the series. So is it just because of that? If your mind is changed, is it changed at all? Let's start with Adam.
Oh, my mind has changed. I mean, how could your mind not be changed from where it was 3 days ago. And then obviously going back even further to after game two in Brooklyn. Yeah, you can't. We're all squared. This is a series, and it's that great situation where, you know, you have the chance to break serve. You're not worried about holding serve now. The book's going into game five with all the momentum, not just in terms of results, but just the dynamics of the series with the injury swings that unfortunately have fallen the Nets' way. Yeah, the books are in a very, very good place. Is that purely down to Kyrie? Yes and no. I mean, a game when they played absolutely terribly, and that was game three. And that was something that, amongst everything else, we did discuss, Rohan, which was, you know, they've opened the door. And then if you win game four, it's a case of let's go along for the ride and let's see what happens. And the Nets really should have found a way to win that game. I really thought they were going to win that game right up until kind of the final 3 minutes, when all of a sudden the Bucks found some offense. Not the prettiest offense, but they found functional offense to just get some points on the board. Then on this game, the Bucks were making a lot of shots, long overdue. Still, the percentages don't grade out as something completely off the charts. There's still room for some good games, but the volume of made threes was very, very positive and may not be something they match again. The game was close enough that if Kyrie was there, it could have been a different game. But I think most importantly, we just got to give the Bucks credit for playing really well. For the first time in the series, they played well. Guys were fully engaged. They were doing what they needed to do on both ends. The Bucks won the battle of the role players. We'll get to some really notable role player performances. And then star players, stepped up again. Maybe even beyond what their box score contributions show. I think in the case of Chris Middleton, I can't remember too many Middleton games that are much better than that. And it feels like that's not really all there in the box score. Drew just found enough, but we're still not quite seeing what we'd like to see. Got a little bit better as the game went on. And I think it's really his jump shot, right? It's the thing that we'd like to see fall a bit more. But all in all, I mean, the Bucks are now in a great position. But we can't pretend that, Kyrie's injury hasn't played a major role in that. The Bucks playing well this time, that's what you want to see. If they'd only won this game again in a really ugly fashion because Kyrie went down, I don't know how I would feel. I might be closer to how I was a few days ago than I am right now, which is the Bucks have given us reason for optimism. And hey, Bud has given us some reason for optimism. This was a good Bud game with some adjustments and some things that they maybe still need to go to some more, but they did some stuff that worked, which I'm sure we'll get into in real detail as we go on here.
Yeah, I can't really say I disagree with you there, Adam. It's just, you can't look at this game and say, oh, it's the same old Bucks. No, they're playing in a much different way. Has my mind changed about how I feel about this series? Probably not, because there's still following the same patterns that we've talked about all series long. Like, if they actually get some flowing offense, they get like actual sets being run, not just delving into isolation play. This team has the capability to hang with anyone in the entire league, and they're showing it right now against the Brooklyn Nets. And there's no reason to say that, oh, like, we can't see this going forward.
Yeah, I think for me, certainly the way the Bucks played, even before Kyrie went down, I mean, if you look, the Nets were -4 in the Kyrie minutes before he gets hurt, which obviously a lot of those came with KD. Those two have been playing a ton of minutes in this series, and they've done well. I mean, they've those two especially. I think Kyrie really has impressed me. He had a great defensive play not too long or soon before he went down. But Milwaukee was playing with Giannis at the center for real. They were using Giannis off-ball actions. He was cutting to the rim. He was finally setting some screens, although still not a terrific screen and role player, unfortunately. But I think there was a change-up in play style for the Bucks. And I think really the reason for optimism, and I too think that this is obviously a different thing now for a lot of reasons, I think the gray area, or not the gray, but like the correct middle ground, is Kyrie's injury, of course, plays a huge role. the Bucks also improved the way they played. Bud coached a much better game. I mean, early on, the Nets jump out to a lead, and you see the same old tweets of like, there's a couple people who will just always blame Bud when things are not going well.
And the shots they were creating early were good, though.
They were good. The game started really well from a schematic perspective, and I realize there's probably people who associate me with always blaming Bud no matter what, and I get that, but right away I was like, no, Bud is not messing up right now. Like, Drew had four really good looks to start the game and only made one of them, but eventually it came around. Chris and Giannis helped a lot with it coming around, it being the Bucks offense, but they were actually executing and not just ISOing. And I think the real room for optimism is they won this game fairly handily at the end of the day, but there's still a lot of room for improvement. I mean, that second half, there was multiple occasions when I thought Brooklyn was actually going to be able to get back into the game because Milwaukee got too ISO happy. Giannis still taking way too many threes. As soon as he made his first three-point attempt, I was a little concerned that it wouldn't actually work out all that well for the Bucks. And he goes on to take four more and make none of them. And it's just, it's a problem at this point that we really need to cut those down. But all that said, I was kind of surprised. I mean, I know KD on this team, there's not a lot of help. I get it. I was a little surprised he wasn't able to get something going because I do think the Bucks left the window open. And there was some, I think there was a real opportunity for the Nets to come back and take this game. Like, I think it wasn't like a Bucks blowout win. I thought it was in an in-between area a few times. Chris Middleton with a huge triple, I think, to end the third quarter that really helped. But KD just not able to shot make. And not all of them were like him being triple teamed with no space. He missed some good looks too. So I think there's still room for improvement. The Bucks can and should and need to get better. But we are seeing movement in the right direction.
Can I get spicy here? I know this is, you know, Rowan's smiling.
Oh boy.
KD's heart was not in it once Kyrie went.
Nope.
This is a guy who, let's say, we know he has a history of liking to play with other superstars. And all of a sudden he was looking around and he's like, it's me and Blake Griffin. And then Blake Griffin was just not there either. Like,
there was big, I did not sign up for this energy.
100%. It is literally, if he wanted to sign up for that, he would have gone and signed for the Knicks. Like, if he wanted to live in New York, he didn't. This is the situation he chose to go to. The Bucks did a much, much better job of defending, and PJ Tucker was great. But just generally as a team, I think much better awareness. I think Brooke is again doing absolutely everything he can. It's not always going to be good, but he's doing everything he can. And that's all you can ask from him. But KD was not the same player mentally. You could see his shoulders like slump. His body language was different, his demeanor. And I don't think you're wrong. Like, the game was still there, that if he really wanted to will the team to it and rally them up and say, come on, you're all coming with me, we're gonna go and do this. He's Kevin Durant. He could still do that. But it was very, very different. And I think you tweeted something, it might even have been just before Kyrie went down injured, Ty, about KD starting to grift.
Yeah.
Maybe it was after. Like, that was his whole thing. He had won, I think it was in the third quarter, where he tried to get a foul on a triple. It might have been Bruce Brown was there setting a screen. And really, he just jumped into Bruce Brown, flailed on the ground and was like, where's my foul? Like, that's the place it got to pretty quickly, when I don't think it needed to for him. His shots were still going to be there. That's the thing. And you see it, like, okay, PJ has the incredible block that's called a foul. But when you're Kevin Durant and you can shoot like he can, everything is like, you know, Chris Middleton's favorite situation. Imagine if Chris Middleton had KD's size and everyone was smaller, and every single time he just looked there, he's like, oh, I could just shoot over everyone. Like, that's the thing Durant has going for him. And it was working. He was in rhythm until it kind of just feels like the foot came off the gas. There was, understandably, kind of air came out of the Nets as a team. But I am very intrigued. My call along is that the Nets will crumble if you can test them. This is a much kind of sterner test than I expected, because it's not even about what the Bucks are doing just yet. We may be moving closer towards that, but it's about, you know, you're down Harden, you're down Kyrie. Game five is there for the taking. Game five is there for the taking, and the Bucks have to lock in on that. I can't see Kyrie playing game five. I wouldn't be surprised if by the time the game six comes around, if we see James Harden again. I know he's back doing some basketball stuff, but I think the phrase Steve Nash used was there's a gap to be bridged. I think they could bridge that gap a little bit quicker than they might like to, depending how things go over the next few days.
Yeah, and also let's not kid ourselves a little bit. A lot of the success against Kevin Durant in this game came due to the physicality of the game that the referee crew was letting slide a little bit. Like, I've complained about referees a lot in the past in regards to Milwaukee. They were letting them play today, especially against Kevin Durant.
Do you think there was anything? I see that in post game, Steve Nash has drawn attention to PJ Tucker's defense on Durant.
That's a clown comment in my. What is PJ Tucker doing?
It's games with Chip. Like, we know what the intent of it is. It's to just get a softer whistle going back to Brooklyn.
It's non-basketball.
You're
going to
get that anyway.
Come on.
But maybe I've just got Book's glasses on. I couldn't say anything else. I did not feel that was the case.
It's not.
I didn't think it was favored one way or the other. I'm just saying the general level of it lended its way towards Milwaukee's favor.
No, but I'm like the quote that PJ is like showing non-basketball kind of.
Yeah, that's
what about when Blake Griffin checked his arm when it was in between the screen, like, which is just, I'm going to try and dislocate your shoulder here.
Yeah, like,
forget that. He almost took out Giannis in the air.
In the air, right.
He also threw Brooke Lopez when Brooke was kind of falling near him. He just like chucked him. I feel like no attention was paid to half of the Blake stuff because there's so much of it. So yeah, to talk about PJ when Blake is out there doing that stuff is ridiculous. And I think it was incidental, but Joe Harris just absolutely haymakering Pat Connaughton going for a rebound. And Pat just sitting there bleeding profusely and then coming back into the game.
He just sat there on the floor with his eye bleeding and just looking at the ref saying nothing.
Really? Come on.
Nothing.
That's Pat's iconic Bucks moment. That really is. That's the stuff of lore. If this season goes on, one, he was really, really great. Like, just cannot ask for more. That is in part, it's down to his performance, but I think, like, we're going to end up talking about Pat, we're going to end up talking about Tucker. That's down to how you set out as a team to play. And both of those guys reaped the rewards because you were playing inside out and you were passing to the corners over and over again. You want to get PJ Tucker like into a game, not being the invisible man on offense, pass to the corners. And if it's driving kick to the corners, and if Chris is passing as well as Chris passed today, whipping passes to the corner. Like, that's not usually something he does. He was even connecting on lobs with Giannis, the kind of passes that he always overthrows. Like, if all of that happens and you start playing that way, even Giannis did more of it. I could still see more. You could still step in. And instead of being like, okay, well, this is going to be one of my five threes, or this is going to be one of my couple of mid-rangers that were just as bad as the threes, you know, keep going and find those passes to the corners. It was the most purposeful the Bucks have played inside out in a long time, partly because Giannis played some actual five too. And that gives you a pack game, that gives you a PJ Tucker game. And it completely just transforms the dynamics that you have with your bench unit, which, like, the Bucks bench can be nothing. It can be really bad, and we've seen that. But if you want to make it something, I think the key to unlocking it is also something that's going to mesh with your best player's skills. And we saw some of that in this game four.
Yeah, I thought just playing inside out and just actually moving the ball. I mean, it's one of those things where obviously it's better when you do that. And we've said a million times, you just absolutely cannot out ISO the Nets, at least when two of the three guys are healthy, because they're just going to be better at that. But the real like other benefit is I just felt like the Bucks had multiple role players actually in the game, which just did not feel like it was the case in games two and three, and even game one to an extent. Like, Pat was involved in making momentum plays. Forbes had a couple nice plays, although not an overall terrific game. Obviously, PJ Tucker, even Brooke Lopez was hitting some threes that I didn't necessarily love him taking. And Bobby Portis with like the most un-Bobby Portis game of like blocks and just getting the crowd amped up.
Bobby Portis I want to see.
I almost couldn't believe he only got 12 minutes. I thought he was really good despite going 0 for 3.
I can't believe he didn't score.
Maybe that's why he only got the 12 minutes. He was 0 for 3. But I thought that was a great Bobby Portis game, really keeping the momentum going at Fiserv early in this one. But I just felt like there were so many guys involved and like literally in the offense with all the assists and the playmaking, but also just like in the flow of the game. And I just think that's the other benefit. That's why like the Harden Rockets teams always floundered, because nobody was in the game except Harden. Like, right, he's just holding the ball and you're standing still in the corner and shooting. I just think it's really hard to win a game that way. And that's pretty much what the Bucks were doing for the better part of two games there in the series. They go away from that and you see instant results. Like, there's no chance we could have a Pat Connaughton game like this in the way they played in game three. Like, it would just, it's not possible.
And you've just described like PJ Tucker's last 2 years in the NBA there and giving the example. And I'm sure there was part of him in the past few games, which is like, not again. Like, not again. Why is this exactly the same thing that I've been through?
Maybe I can't make trees.
Yeah, well, there's definitely a part to that. I will say, and I would stand by it now, and it's something I think they need to give some consideration to. It won't change, particularly as they've won two now. It won't change. PJ starting is still, you know, going into this game, I wasn't quite sure, and I was like, there's a need for offense. Again, there's a need for offense. Right now, you're winning enough on defense, and with Kyrie down, it's more justifiable, and that changed it a little. But there's definitely some good fortune in how that's played out. I don't think it's the right call to have started this starting lineup for four games, but here we are. They're right in the series. And there were some other things, too, that I don't know if they were always the right call. For example, they just abandoned having someone in the dunker spot for a pretty large spell. They went five out, and when they went five out, they had what Jeff Van Gundy not unfairly described as the worst spacing possession he's ever seen in basketball at any level. And it really was, because at that point, you're just being like,
It was a possession where there was an isolation on the left wing, except no one was isolating on the left wing because everyone was just on the right side of the floor, just at the top of the arc. They're like, yeah, this is going to be a good possession here.
You could literally throw a blanket over all five books on it. Like, that's not how you want to play basketball.
So this was Brook Lopez gets the ball and four guys stand around him. And Bobby Portis is like sort of cutting to the rim. And Brooke is like trying to go up and under, but not up at all. Just under, basically, toward the rim. And he throws an awful pass that gets picked off. And I remember the play so vividly. I mean, a lot of people, of course, how could you not react to that? But I remember tweeting, like, this is the kind of thing where you cannot have possessions like this against Kevin Durant and the Nets. Like, this is the kind of thing that could really cost you the game. Obviously, it didn't. But that's what I mean when you said, like, things to clean up. Like, there's still a lot of meat on the bone when it comes to empty possessions. I still think the Bucks need to do much better, but something you guys kept saying in the game three post-game pod between Rohan just like struggling to just hold on was, you know, there's a blueprint, right? Like the first quarter, I think it was, where Giannis was like really good and moving off ball and the Bucks were all involved and they built up that big lead. There's something there, like, let's capitalize on that and make that more like the whole game, and we can see results. And it wasn't the whole game yet, but we did start to see results.
Yeah, and also get other guys involved is the other thing too, right? Because that's something we kept talking about, Rohan, is that, you know, it's great playing like that. If it's only Giannis and Chris scoring, you're still kind of asking for trouble.
Yeah, there was just a lot of axillary pieces getting involved, which is something that I was hammering the point of last episode. You just, when things are going in a flow on offense, this is what you were getting to, Ty, it works out better for the other players. That's how you get a Pat Connaughton involved. That's how you get an Elijah Bryant involved.
Was he involved?
Here's the thing.
I thought he was good. Other than the shot that was, you know, really ugly air ball, but that's to be kind of expected. Like, this isn't far off his first NBA minutes, and they're coming in a really important game against the Nets in the second round of the playoffs. I thought he was out there. He looked like he fit in defensively. And I have been saying this. I felt like he's a guy. There'll be a situation where Bud will, you know, he'll turn to him. And you look at the other options, I think it was the right one to go to. He can hold his own out there defensively. One, he's an adult. He has played professional basketball at a high level for many years. And he just, okay, I've got to go in. I've got to kind of fit to the system. He's a good shooter too. I don't think that shot shouldn't be something that Bucks fans now have in their mind. If they see him out there again, for whatever reason, if Pat's other eye gets like bust open, Elijah Bryant can make some shots. So I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with that at all. I thought he did everything you could ask of him.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, and I don't disagree. Just him checking in multiple times in this game, I wasn't even mad. Like, I got it. I understood Pat being out, and obviously Dante is out for the playoffs and everything else. But it was just such a surreal thing to see him check in.
It's better than Teague, though, right? Isn't that the thing? It's like you're looking at who can you go to defensively, even if you're just talking physically. Like, what have you got on your bench? I think it's you would have kind of come down to Bryant. Well, Thanasis has his own role, and that's very finely defined, and it's working great. You know, I like the role. I think Thanasis likes the role, which is also important. But I think for the Pat minutes, you're probably thinking Elijah or Jordan Wara. And yeah, I think the guy who's got years of pro experience and is just that bit stronger and is healthy.
I wonder if a similar situation comes up, if Justin Jackson ends up getting a shot. Like, he has multiple years of pro experience at the NBA level. I mean, he's not great, but I mean, he's a serviceable role player.
Roland's face. I wish people could see it.
Well, it's versus Elijah Bryant. I mean,
what's wrong with Elijah Bryant?
We just don't know anything about him. Excuse me.
This is non-NBA bias, you know? He's really good. I'm not someone, if Jordan Tresky is listening, you know, now we're getting into further territory.
I can't believe Jordan
is
missing the
Elijah. No, Jordan Bryant listens. Does. I know Jordan listens.
No, but I mean not here for it.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, he's a shame. He's, you know, not at home, I think. He's on his travels. Like, you were on your travels. It's really, I sound a bit husky, Ty. What do people think of Ty's voice? But, yeah, he should be here for what could be the Elijah Bryant game. You know, he should be here for that. Like, what was I talking about? I've lost my train of thought.
Yeah, I'm anti-NBA, or I'm pro-NBA biased. And
what Jordan would like to hear me saying is, do you not remember Elijah Bryant at Summer League?
I don't.
Okay.
I'm not going to hold you. I don't.
I hate Summer League. Yeah. I think it's completely useless. I think it's meaningless. Every now and then, though, you see a guy and you're like, oh, there's the man amongst the boys. You know, there's the guy who actually knows how to play.
Oh, yeah.
That was Elijah Bryant. It's
Rashad
like
Rashad Vaughn. Oh.
No. God. Malcolm Brogdon, like rookie year sort of thing. Elijah Bryant can play. You know he can play. And he hasn't been playing for kind of small teams around Europe, too. He's been in pretty high-stakes games and big competition.
This is how you get, like, the Mike James of the world, the Campazos of the world.
Yeah,
this is how you get that
good.
Story.
The defense was good.
It's a well that honestly the Bucks should be going to a whole lot more when you've got no money and you're trying to fill out your roster with quality players. It's like, okay, who's in Europe that wants to come to the NBA that we can get? Because yeah, otherwise, no disrespect to Jackson, but you are talking about players like that if you're just going through the NBA route. I can't believe we've now done. We haven't talked about Giannis or Chris really yet.
Yeah, let's get there. I want to talk about Chris actually, because when you, Brent, the offense was great. I'm obviously going to talk about that, but when you mentioned bringing KD off, or not KD, bringing PJ Tucker off of the bench, I think the reason I think it might work, and I think Rohan on the last pod, you pointed out like the other options just aren't that great, which may be part of the reason that Tucker is still starting. Forbes has not been a consistently useful shooter. Pat had a great game today, but outside of that in the series has not been, you know, all that useful. So I don't necessarily disagree with continuing to start PJ. Certainly not now that you can just hone in on Durant and just dare anyone else to do anything. And for Brooklyn, no one else could do anything. No net outside of KD and Kyrie actually scores more than 10 points. But I think if you were to bench PJ and just bring in a different starting five, I think the reason you could do it is probably, at least in part, Middleton's terrific defense on Durant. I mean, you want to talk about team turnarounds and outlook turnarounds. And one thing, you know, it's funny to look at, you know, some of the reactions to game two now and laugh about how extreme everyone was. You should be encouraged changing your mind if you get new information. When the Bucks play like crap, we're going to talk about them like they're playing like crap and vice versa. Like, this is not a complicated thing, folks, but if you just want to talk about turnarounds, I think Middleton as a whole, and especially defensively. I mean, this guy blocked Kevin Durant in this game. I thought he was really good on both ends the entire game. It's probably, I mean, if you look at his box score and Durant's box score, you would think Durant had a much better game. And obviously the scoring output is pretty much always going to be there more for Durant than Middleton. I thought Chris was way better on both ends than Kevin Durant was in this game. And really, like, when the game, I won't say got tenuous, but could have been tenuous there in the second half, the reason it never got there all the way is because of Chris.
Look at the Kevin Durant shot he made to finish the third quarter, too. Yeah. Sorry, Rohan.
Yeah.
Your Lex Luthor moment.
Yes.
I guess.
So we've been talking about Kevin Durant in this series, like he's God in this series.
Oh my goodness.
Chris Middleton, PJ Tucker, Giannis, the Bucks. They made God bleed. Are they really God?
I somehow want to work this into a Pat Connaughton thing.
I was about to say the only person I saw bleed was Pat Connaughton. So
not actually, it's a metaphor. Whatever.
I'm saying one person on the court actually bled. And you know, was he godlike? I don't know. I'll let others decide.
I can't believe you guys just swept that under the rug.
It was good, Rohan. It was good. I think it's a fair point. Like, Durant has not been nearly as good over these last two games as you would expect. And I think it's easy to say, you know, game three, just a bad shooting game. It happens to everyone. In this game, I mean, again, I think the box score is going to lie a little bit. He also, this is, I think, the most free throws by far he's drawn in the game. So there, I think a lot of it was just frustration and pure just being pissed off at the situation he's found himself in. There could be some gamesmanship, though, because KD really was not getting to the foul line that much games one through three. He gets there 10 times and makes 9 of them. But 28 points for Durant on 9 for 25 shooting, 1 for 8 from 3. One of the weird things about this series is, like, neither team is really hitting threes, which I certainly didn't expect going into this thing. But 5 turnovers, 5 assists, team low minus 23. And it's just like, I think that tells the story a little bit. Like, Durant, for his standards, certainly was not all that good. And Middleton was just phenomenal. It didn't literally bleed, but metaphorically did bleed a little bit.
I can't. That was such a beautiful moment. You guys just ruined it. But it's
fine. I ruined the first because I stepped on it. And then it came back. And then Pat bled. I mean, but it's really on you. I mean, not the time for that. You could have worked it a different way. Anyway, has KD ever been in this position?
Like all on his own?
Yeah, never.
Yes, he won MVP that year.
Yeah, it depends how you would. I mean, Westbrook.
I think he'd like Westbrook on his team right now.
Oh,
if,
yeah.
I mean, right, if Kyrie like, yeah, and Harden yeah. are going to be out for the rest of the series, I think KD would be very happy to have Russ suit up beside him sometime soon. I mightn't be entirely unhappy about that either. But this is a different spot for him. And even if we are to make a case that, yeah, he's seen something like it, it's back in the OKC days, and it's quite a bit back in the OKC days. But even then, like, if you go back early, well, he had Harden as a sixth man. Might not be Harden now, but a really, really good player. This is a spot that's a really big deal, and it is exactly the spot that he's tried to avoid his entire career with every decision he's made.
Yeah, I mean, I think all that slander Giannis got after game two, I feel like KD suddenly can maybe relate to him a little bit. They're not really getting any help out there. And obviously the Bucks had a better cast then than KD does right now, but just the fact of like, you're just not getting any assistance. And that was the case for Giannis. And obviously he wasn't that good either, but certainly now for Durant, like this game, Bruce Brown tried his best, which is always what Bruce Brown does. But when Bruce Brown is like the guy you're talking about next after KD, that's probably going to be an issue. Yeah. It's a good point that he's never really done something like this before. And certainly, I mean, you can quabble about the OKC teams and if he's done it, he certainly doesn't want to do it. I mean, that's obvious. And it probably a lot, like, I don't know how many players would, but I mean, like the dames of the world had pretty much knowingly sign up for something like this. I mean, there are a lot of players, Giannis. Yeah. You know, Durant has not, and you can argue is it smart to get championships and legacy, blah, blah, blah. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, but the fact of the matter is, suddenly, from two stars to one star to him and, you know, wash stars and role players and everything else, it's an interesting situation. I'm going to be fascinated to see how the Nets come out of the gate in game five, assuming Harden and Kyrie are both out, because I do feel like it's kind of a sneakily big moment for Durant as a Net. Like, this is the first real test as a Net, and I don't know. I mean, it's not saying he has to win the game by himself or anything, but it's just going to be interesting.
I think Sam Anderson had a great tidbit in his fantastic feature for the New York Times that everyone should check out on Kevin Durant and the Brooklyn Nets, where he was talking about KD as sort of like a guy who's like, oh, can he be like a Westbrook type player? Can he be a Damian Lillard type player? Like, I will take all the shots. And he said he probably can do that. And like coaches around him were giving this information as well. It's like, he could do that, but it's not maximizing his talents. This was in KD's words saying like, I can't really be on the defensive end as engaged and playing off the ball, coming off screens, being a threat off that when I'm the one taking all the shots. So that feeds into the mentality as well, that he doesn't believe that he can really maximize his talent as a player if he's just being like, every single possession I have the ball and I'm doing something.
There's kind of an interesting contradiction in that, though. It points to a selfishness in trying to be unselfish, because right now, for example, KD cannot think about how he maximizes himself as a player. It needs to be, how do we maximize, you know, what we can get out of this as a team? How do we maximize every point we can get in these games? What can we do? Like, there's just... this isn't an optimal situation. So I think something as kind of idealistic as that idea of, you know, oh, the best version of me is going to do this, that's going to have to go away. And it's really interesting because he's been in the opposite spot. Like, think of the Warriors, and all the talk was, you know, he had to adjust to his role, and it was so easy for him because really it's the kind of role he's always wanted for all of his talent. That's where he feels most comfortable, and it's really where he can do most damage. You know, it's not a real surprise that he's so much more effective with other quality players around him. It goes for every player, but I think his style of play means it's kind of magnified even further for him. But I mean, I think you're right, Ian, that it's going to be good to look at and fascinating to see how the Nets come out in game five. But this series may hinge now on how the Bucks come out in game five. If the Bucks start game five fast, this could be it. You know, this could be reverse Raptors. that's kind of the spot that the series is now. Like, it is on this kind of very finely balanced point where if the Bucks strike first and in a really notable way, and the Nets are down tools, maybe downing tools as well, to start game five, you know, coming back to Pfizer Forum, Bucks also really good at home, looking really good. The crowd was great at Pfizer really Forum
good.
Today.
It's really good.
And if they do somehow advance beyond this series, I think there's something to be said there for just how good the Bucks are looking at home. But, you know, if the Bucks can have a first quarter like they had in game three, where they can dominate the Nets on both ends, and then maybe just follow it up with nothing that happened over the rest of game three.
Game two. Sorry.
No, game three.
Game three, my bad.
Nothing
from game two at all.
Yeah, that's right. Then this is a very interesting conversation we're going to be having.
So, I found a wild stat while digging through KD stuff, because I was wondering why he didn't go to the rim more. Because that's all, and I don't know, such a jump shooter. But, you know, that I think is always, and I've said this on the pod, I think the game two pod, like, you have to get to the rim to start a run. You just need to get to the rim. He went to the rim six times. One made layup, one made dunk. Kevin Durant was blocked in the paint four times by the Bucks in this game. Do you know the Bucks who blocked him?
Ooh, yes.
Pat got one, I think.
Pat got two.
Okay.
Pat Connaughton twice, Chris Middleton, Bobby Portis blocked Kevin Durant in the paint. Like, just wild that this 7-foot unicorn scorer, and he is that. I'm not saying this in a sarcastic way. He literally is that thing. Gets blocked four times, twice by Pat, once by Bobby Portis, known for everything but defense, and once by Middleton, who that one's a little less surprising. But Kevin Durant, 2 for 6 around the rim in this game, four times blocked, is kind of what you'd expect to happen going at Kevin Durant at the rim, not Kevin Durant's life around the rim.
Can I say something else about Pat? Because I think this is the most athletic game I've ever seen from Pat.
His off-ball defense.
I don't just mean like in a... Look, we've all seen him. The guy's in the dunk contest. We know he can jump. We know he can dunk. But I mean just in terms of like being like a cornerback. And just his anticipation, his ability to read, like all those KD passes. And every time a ball broke loose, it just seemed like, oh, Pat's in the right place to scoop it up today. That's a big, big deal. Like, just he had four steals and two blocks. It's like, if Pat Connaughton could do
like an actual interception, like, yes, he caught that, like, yes, back footed. It was beautiful. It was similar to the play that Mike James made in game three, where he just sort of read a crisp double and sort of read that pass to the corner. Pat did that, except it was a lob pass from a 7-footer.
My favorite play of the game, I'll forgive Bodie if you don't remember this, but the moment it happened, I was like, this is my favorite play of the game. I don't care what else happens from here. So in the second quarter, not very tidy Nets offense. KD might have been off the floor at the time. I think it was probably just before Kyrie went down. The ball kind of broke to Blake Griffin right around kind of, we'll say left wing, right around the 3-point line, left wing. And the floor was open. He basically had a clear out and he saw Pat Connaughton behind them. And Blake was like, oh, great. I'm just going to back this guy down and get an easy 2 points. And he was backing and backing and he got nowhere. Eventually, he got himself close enough to put up kind of a hook, missed the shot. And I was like, now we're seeing Pat in the role where he can actually contribute, which is something that's come before. It's like, can you get him in a spot where he's defending a four? You know, in this series, there's probably times he can defend a five, because again, that's where his athleticism can really work. People look at him, they're like, oh, he's, you know, average sized wing. What's the big deal here? But try to move him and the guy is strong. This is, you know, Giannis's weight room partner for a reason. There aren't probably many stronger players on the Bucks than Pat. So I thought that was a really interesting play in terms of, one, something the Bucks could look to do some more of defensively. And particularly if we're going to see more lineups where Brook isn't on the floor and Giannis would be the five or PJ's the five, you know, you're switching possibilities. There's nothing to be afraid of if Pat's capable of you know, holding up against Blake Griffin, backing him down like that. But I just thought that was a moment where it's like, oh, this is the game where like everything is falling into place for the Bucks role players. And that was a lot of fun to see.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you talk about Pat with Giannis at the five. I think in that situation, suddenly you don't even have to not worry about him switching on to Blake. He might just start on Blake from time to time. Like if it's Giannis and PJ are out there, those are not like, there's no one you need to hide on a slow guy. I mean, Pat is the guy basically, but like there's no center you need to hide. Like Giannis has proven he's up to the task of taking on perimeter players all the time. And obviously Tucker has shown that beyond a doubt. So I think, yeah, Pat's role starting to crystallize a little bit as the Bucks move to these Giannis at center alignments. Just the full Pat counted in line. 8 points, 2 for 5 shooting, all from deep. 2 for 2 from free throw, which is very rare for the Bucks. 2 rebounds, 1 offensive, 3 assists, 4 steals, 2 blocks, 1 turnover, 1 foul, plus 23. The only bench player besides Elijah Bryant with a positive plus minus. And it was like overwhelmingly positive.
It's time for Pat to declare for the Irish national team. He's hinted at it before. Then he got called up to some like select squad for, and I hope that didn't turn his head. It was only the select squad, Pat. It doesn't mean anything. It's time to come home, Pat. We will embrace you. By we, I mean me and maybe 5-6 other people, but he'll be a star.
Yeah, I mean, anything but no more Bucks on Team USA is all I'm going to say. Let's talk about Giannis. I think it's probably about time. And really, probably should finish up talking about Chris. We talked about his defense and then kind of got sidetracked on Durant. Chris's offense, and I think, Adam, you made this point on Twitter and on the pod already, the passing. Middleton with 8 assists. This felt to me like an early season Middleton game. Like this year, he was finishing around the rim and he was passing much better. And I have no idea why, but it just kind of, we went away from that. We didn't see it anymore. I think part of it maybe was Drew coming on and taking on more responsibility. Part of it was just Chris's nature of drifting in and out frustratingly. But 8 assists for him, it felt like an 8-assist game for him. He was making every pass. And when he's racking up the assists like that, makes it a lot easier to live with only 15 attempted shots, 7 for 15 from Chris. His offensive impact, though, certainly feels a lot bigger than 19 points on 15 shots. Rohan, what were your thoughts on the Chris Middleton experience tonight? Which is like that question on any given night could elicit such a wildly different response.
That's probably the most polarizing question you can ask in terms of Bucks discussions in general.
I think it's up there.
I think the Chris Middleton experience tonight can be summed up in a play that was, I think, early second quarter, where there's a Chris Giannis pick and roll, Joe Harris crashing in the corner, quick swing pass, PJ Tucker, wide open corner 3. That is perfect Chris Middleton right there, because he has the threat of the pull-up jumper that the Nets have to respect. Giannis is obviously getting his due respect, and he's making the correct reads. He's not necessarily taking a contested jumper that he probably can make and has made plenty of times. No, he's getting the hot hand, PJ Tucker, a wide open corner 3, because he made the perfect read right away. There was no hesitation. We've talked a lot about Chris Middleton in terms of hesitancy and just this entire Bucks team. Nothing is really like on the nose passing, like, okay, this guy's here, this guy's here. Let's boom, boom, pass the ball, open shot. We saw that a little bit in this game, which is probably the closest we're going to see to a great Bucks offense, at least so far in this series, because everyone is just on the same page, and Chris Middleton was the captain of that.
My only gripe with Middleton the last two games, where I think he's been really, really good, but he was the Bucks' best player, I feel like, in game 3. Stop going under on Joe Harris.
Oh, yeah.
Stop going under. That's the one thing.
They've been getting lucky with that.
Well, he got burned at least twice, and once early when the Nets kind of rolled out to an 11-point lead, wasn't it? They got out to one of those. Was just, you know, you could see the time for Middleton to think about it. You could see him weigh it up in his mind and be like, yeah, I'm going under this screen. I was like, why? So
it's playing with fire. I know you had an atrocious game 3, Harris, and wasn't that much better in game 4, but I agree. It's not one you don't want to test that, I don't think.
It's a tough spot for him because all the things that make him such a deadly weapon are just rapidly falling away. At this rate, he is going to be the Nets superstar by the end of game 5. and he's going to be trying to figure out how to create his shots. We're going to see a lot more of him testing out that improved, you know, driving game, which has been improved for many years. I will stick to, but it's something still. They're the guys that, particularly with the Nets down, the players are down. You just can't invite those players to get hot, and all of a sudden, 25-point Joe Harris game that you have to worry about. Because, well, hey, the Bucks scored more than 86 points. Great. They got over 100 points. Fantastic. They're still not scoring at a level that they have margin for error with any of these role players. And that's something they just have to be very careful about, those kind of moments. Particularly early in a game, you don't want someone with like a fast 12 points.
Yeah, and I
just realized something. Sorry, Ty. I don't want to cut you off here. I just realized something. Adam, do you remember at the end of the game 3 pod, I asked for score predictions and I said it was going to be a palindrome? Came true. 107, 86, 86, 107.
I don't get it.
This was 96.
Yeah.
No, for the Bucks score.
Oh, they scored 107 in game one?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. My goodness. The series is so
I actually called weird. The Bucks score.
That is this definitely series... the Rohan moment that everyone's going to remember from the game 3 pod.
Yeah. The palindrome call.
For years to come, people remember that game 3 pod where Rohan, and then someone will be, yes, he predicted the palindrome.
Okay, come on, that's a little impressive.
It's a good
call. Prediction.
Okay, cool. Sorry, Ty.
No, it's good. It's very. This is the weirdest series I can remember in quite some time, and not just because of the injuries. But the thing with Chris, I think Rohan, you hit on it well. It's just like he just needs to be decisive, and I think. Probably his worst play of the game outside of letting Joe Harris go. And I remember that play early. Joe Harris only had two makes. They might have both been on just Chris going under. But he let Kyrie pick his pocket, like just taking way too long to dribble and think about what he wanted to do. And really just he wasn't going anywhere. Like he was just kind of standing at the top of the arc, dribbling, like not making a move to step back or drive, just kind of chilling there. And that's like, he just can't. Like Middleton just needs to be decisive. Like he does not have the handle to sit there and dance around all day, like go for whatever you're going to go for, just do it. And I think the highlights, the best moments of him in this game, that's exactly what was happening. He's dribbling to his spot and shooting. He's, you know, taking advantage of a hard closeout and finding a wide open PJ Tucker, stuff like that. And I just think he needs to be more decisive whenever possible. And obviously he was for a lot of this game, but that one moment just was kind of encapsulated, like can't just sit around. Like that kills the Bucks. My least favorite Bucks play, my new least favorite Bucks play, is when it's either like a failed pick and roll because Giannis doesn't really roll, or did they just enter it into the post to Giannis? He's got the ball in the elbow. He dribbles a little bit, stops, throws it out, runs out, grabs it, and like takes his time to get right back to where he was in the first place before missing a fadeaway. I hate it so much. And it's the same idea of like, be decisive. Like, don't take all this time to reset the play just to do the same thing that wasn't working. Just be decisive and do something. It's not always going to work, but I think the whole team could take a note from Thanasis, who, for whatever word you want to use to describe him, there's some negative ones. Decisive certainly fits in, though.
I've got something I want to say about Thanasis because I just was reminded of it by a picture I saw on Twitter just a moment ago. But to your point about that particular habit the Bucks are falling into on offense. You were on my movie podcast, Captured Celluloid, a while back, Ty. Quite a while back now, probably over a year ago. And we did a best basketball. Or were you on that one or the baseball one?
I did basketball.
Remember when we talked about the scene in Semi-Pro where Will Ferrell, yes. Jackie Moon, just keeps reposting. Yes. He's like, no, give it to me again. That's Giannis. That is Giannis. Where Giannis, he'll dribble in, and he's like, no, take it back. And he comes back out, and then he comes in again. That's Giannis' version of that. It's very, very frustrating to watch. I mean, maybe it's slightly better when he just takes an early shot clock three, because at least giving himself the second chance, he could make a pass. Something good could happen. But yeah, it's a tough one to watch. But Thanasis, we need to mention Thanasis getting absolutely crossed out of his shoes by Kyrie.
Stepped on his shoe. Only half counts. He stepped on his
shoe. But, yes. I don't care about that. I don't care about any of that. He recovered to contest the shot. The shot was missed, which is the most Thanasis thing. The fact he was able to recover. Like, I saw someone had a great meme of Velma from Scooby-Doo on the ground with her glasses having fallen off. And Thanasis side by side is identical. And the fact that he went from that to, by the time that Kyrie kind of gathered the ball back and went to start a shooting motion, being in his face contesting that shot is incredible. Thanasis is amazing. It's just everything is like 200 miles per hour. As was pointed out in the broadcast, that includes like he gets a call to come into the game and he just like sprints in. Then he's in for 20 seconds. The Nets don't score to finish the first half. And he just goes sprinting again. He's sprinting and screaming down the tunnel. And he's just like, yeah, everyone's looking at him. Giannis is like, what is he doing? Like, it's incredible.
I've come to realize that there's two approaches to Thanasis. There's people who get it, who have refined taste and appreciate Thanasis, and there's people who are ignorant. Like, those are the only two options. Like, you see the tweets about Thanasis focusing on him on the ground and ignoring the fact that he does get up to contest the shot successfully. It's like when you see someone interacting with, like, Drill on Twitter thinking it's a real account. Like, you just don't get it. It's not that you're not funny. You're not smart. You just don't understand. You're not in it with the rest of us. So either you understand Thanasis or you don't. And if there's some people who don't, that's fine. Some people probably don't find Drill funny.
Listen to the podcast.
Listen to the podcast and you'll figure it out. But it's like that. There's a level of understanding you just need to achieve to really enjoy the Thanasis game.
It's the biggest taste. Question this summer is Thanasis free agency, right? We're all in agreement.
It's going to be big.
I'm good.
The Pats, seeing the Pat special?
No, they might have some competition.
The Lakers, they could use
whoever Mark Jackson. Mark Jackson said he could play on any of my teams. And I'm not putting it past that Mark Jackson could have a team next season. So who knows what could happen.
Okay, we're dancing around the main event long enough here.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Giannis. Yeah. So Giannis, for the third time in four games this series, outscores Kevin Durant in this series.
There's
a fun little nugget right there. He also has more restricted area field goals than KD has field goals in general made in the game. Giannis, best player on the court tonight, and it was not close.
Yeah, I mean, I think
so Chris was close-ish. You're right, but I think Chris had a good game.
It's frustrating because, like, 66% of his possessions, yes, and then 34%, you're just like, why are you doing this? Like, the Giannis experience has just been so interesting. Obviously, the positives far outweigh the negatives. Like, I'm not making that case with Giannis or anything even close to it, but there are just still when you talk about meat on the bone for the Bucks offensively, it's like one very stupid Brooke Lopez possession per game that should never happen. And then like Pat will ball handle or Forbes tries to take KD off the dribble. So there's like two or three things like that. And then there's like 12 Giannis possessions that are like posting up indiscriminately or shooting a three for no reason or shooting a fadeaway with 18 seconds left. So I agree. He was tremendous in this game. I think the great Giannis was on display. I just need it tightened up more before I can really bask in like, oh my God, the great Giannis is here. Cause there's too many possessions where it's just like, that is not helping. Like that's not helping the team win tonight or today. I hate day games, but you know, again, I don't want to completely cover up. I mean, 34, 12, three assists, five turnovers, four fouls, but a plus 29. He dominates the Nets. He's finally finding seams. Go figure. When the Bucks start to pass out to the perimeter and get other players involved, suddenly it becomes much easier for Giannis to get to the rim. Who could have seen that coming? But I want to see it a little tighter. Like
he did clean it up a bit this game. Instead of he still took five threes, one of five from three, positive. But a lot of times, yes, it's less than eight. That is a positive development. There was also a couple of possessions where he did what he's done all season when he has like lots of space. A lot of times it's Blake Griffin playing him like that because, you know, he can just grift himself into a charge or just hurt him. Different conversation. Oh, wait, we had that a little bit. Yeah. But a lot of things what Giannis is doing, or a lot of times I should say, is when he has that much space, it's immediately flowing into a pick and roll with him as the screener to eat away at that space. We have not seen that enough from Giannis in these last three games, actually, and even not as much as we probably should have this game, but we started to see it more and more. So I agree with you. It does need to get tighter, but it's on its way. And it's definitely more improved than it was previously.
You made a
point. And he was still fantastic.
Yes.
He was. He was really good. Like, there's only a few things, a few, we'll say maybe three elements of his game. Just say the shots. You could add like four or five shots that you'd want back. Probably six shots I could think of that I'd want back. But that's fine. Like, he's going to take a lot of shots. He's your best player. It's just some of those are so, so bad. I mean, one of the things that you drew attention to on a different point a few minutes ago, Ty, is when he's a screener at a pick and roll and he doesn't roll.
Yeah.
And it just happens too often. And I don't know what the idea behind that is, because he ends up standing there just crowding, like, generally Chris's space. And it's like, this is doing nothing. You know, just roll to take a man away, if nothing else. But it's like, set the screen, I'm just going to kind of stand here now. It's like, no, because he was setting some really good purposeful screens and rolling too and getting great results. I just don't know why there's not more of that every time. It's not even like he's kind of fading. I mean, no one's going to respect that because they want him to take a shot, but that would still get him out of the way. He just kind of sets a lot of screens and then dies in the ball handler's way, which is weird. I don't know why that seems to be something he's doing more and more often. Setting good screens at the moment, so when you set it, then move, you know? Roll would be ideal, but if it's not going to be a roll, well, you know, fade go, sometimes. Go it's somewhere. Just better than standing there. Yes,
you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. Sometimes I wonder if they're just like, they just want to switch, but they don't want to like work that hard to get it. And it's just like, let's just do a switch and ISO. Let's not work too hard on this possession. I don't want to exert too much energy here. It's just, yeah, it is. And again, we're talking all the negatives. Giannis was fantastic. I thought defensively he was quite good. Offensively, he was finding space. I mean, still, of course, getting hosed on some calls as always. But I did think he was finding gaps a little bit better between players. I think trying to go through guys a little bit less and going around a little bit more, and kind of almost like a realization that, like, oh, there's not really that much help coming from anywhere else because nobody on this team except the guy guarding me is ever really locked in on the defensive end. So if I go around him a little bit, there's not anyone really coming to swat the look all that often unless Claxton's out there somewhere else as well. So I did think it was certainly a lot of progress both in, you know, getting him rolling in better looks and him utilizing the ISO touches a little bit better. Would still like to see less of them, but as you said, it's not like he's only going to take DeAndre Jordan shots. I mean, the guy is a superstar.
One other issue that I think we've kind of accepted as, and he's possibly accepted too, as just it's part of his game, it's going to come, which is offensive fouls. Like, he's a lock for at least three most games as a matter of regular season playoffs. That was a big challenge by Bud, and I love that challenge coming early. And I think I just do that every game. You know, first half, Giannis offensive foul, you know, whether it's like that one that you could be pretty confident you're going to win or otherwise, I think the Bucks need to make a really conscious effort to just kind of sow doubt in the mind of officials. He gets called for offensive fouls too often. I think that is pretty straightforward. Some of them are correct calls, but there are some of them that aren't. I think the Bucks need to keep working on that. And I don't really know if there's much better use, because let's be honest, Giannis is always going to be in the 2-3 foul territory in the first half because he's very likely to have a couple of offensive fouls in there. I think it's something that if I was Bud, I would continue to think of, okay, well, that is maybe my best use of it. And it's just good to see the challenge used early for something that, you know, actually affect the game, and it's there. It's a winnable challenge rather than holding it. We might need it late on, and then, you know, it just ends up going unused for the game. That was a big moment and one of the kind of all-time momentum swing challenges that's probably played out since challenges came into effect in the NBA.
It's a 3-point swing as well. It turned into an and one.
Yeah. I think that is, I also would like to see that as part of the thinking, the thought process on the challenges, like, especially if there's clearly a made basket as part of it, because then you do, you literally, it gives you 2 points and like 40 to 60% chance at another one on some of these, but at least 2 points as a result if you win the challenge. Rohan, I feel like you think I'm underappreciating this Giannis game. What am I missing here from the Giannis performance, or what am I overlooking?
Well, I mean, it's not just you in general. I think it's just like the general discourse around Giannis. I don't want to just completely bait you out here. I did that last episode, but it's just...
You'll only do that when you're not here to defend yourself.
Exactly.
Hey, I'll take the shots when I take them. Like Giannis. but it's just the general thought around Giannis is what he can do better rather than what he's already dominating at. And I think that's just a mental thing that a lot of people need to realize is that, sure, he has a lot of areas to improve. We've detailed them. We will continue to detail him. But he's dominating in the playoffs against the title favorites. And that should be appreciated and not be overlooked. That's all I wanted to say.
My only counter to that, like I don't disagree that he's incredible. He's dominating. He could make a couple of small adjustments, just mentality adjustments, and his team would dominate. Like, it's there for him not just to be, you know, two-time MVP, great individual player. It's there for him right now to just tweak his, you know, it's not like we're having the conversation about if he could make the shots. We're just like, just don't take them. Just don't take them. Like, if it's two a game, fine. That will work. You could make both of them, but just don't, particularly when you're missing them and you could see how desperately the Nets are. Like, that's the great example. I think why people focus on it is, like, Giannis can dominate this series on an individual level. His own numbers could be great. And the Bucks could go home. Where if he just makes a slight adjustment, he'll still dominate individually. His stats will be probably even better. And the Bucks could be in the conference finals, and the Bucks go to the finals. And this season could finish with Giannis, you know, not having won an MVP, but he could have a Larry O'Brien trophy in one hand, a finals MVP in the other hand. I just think it's really, we're at that point where, yes, he is at the level where these are the margins. You know, if you get these things wrong, you're going to fall short in spite of the greatness. Where if you can make these changes, well, the Bucks could just go and win it all. It doesn't matter who they're playing. A team as great as the Nets can be, a team as, you know, who are we going with? Are we saying the Hawks could be conference final opponents for who advances from this series? Is this? I don't personally feel that way, but I feel like the Eurostep official line is that the Hawks are coming out of the other side of the bracket.
I'm just trying to set up the Mike Budenholzer revenge tour. That's all. And Antique.
Listen, I'd love a box. Box conference final is like the stuff of my dreams. It's beyond my dreams. That just sounds completely impossible. But
Bucks need to do it for the legend Carlos Delfino, who shined in the last box playoff series.
That's my counter to that, Ron, is I think it's just about, like, we know he's a two-time MVP. So it is past the point of tipping your hat to him for when he's great in a series, no matter who he's against. It's like, can he be great in a series? And can he also make the plays that gets his team to the next level? And it's not new either. Like, I don't feel any kind of way about Giannis maybe getting some extra scrutiny or some extra criticism, because this is what happened to LeBron. So LeBron won the championship, you know? It's just part and parcel, particularly for a player at that position of that size with the kind of skill set that's there. It's a different conversation than if he was a guard even. So I can say, yeah, I get it. You're right. He's been really good. And particularly in this game, he was great, but I get it. A couple little tweaks and he could be entering a new stratosphere where he's not only that player, but he's also the guy who can get his team to win.
Completely fair. Completely fair. And I can't say I really disagree with you there. I don't want the entirety of the discourse to be around what he can improve.
Agreed.
But yeah.
I want to appreciate PJ Tucker.
Yes. Perfect. Mm-hmm. That's where I wanted to go as well. PJ Tucker actually scores today. 13 points. He was hitting shots for the first time. It seemed like he has in a Bucks uniform. It was incredible. He was hitting his corner threes, three of six from deep, actually hit some layups while also playing insane, insane defense on Kevin Durant and just in general. My goodness, it was the PJ Tucker game. It really was.
He even got KD to bite on a fake and then took him off the dribble and, you know, lay it in. A nice floater off the glass. My favorite PJ moment was his angry sit down with the basketball at half court. That was just incredible. I need to go back and, you know, take screenshots of that for future meme purposes. But when he's just sitting down, the ball, staring at it, he's shooting really well as well. He just happened to miss one. It wasn't like the Bobby Portis miss from the same corner. So no need to get that angry. But he's just having it out with the ball. It was great. I was like, yes.
And that's after justly turned 36-year-old PJ Tucker was on the ground fighting for the basketball. That's how he got that play to make that sort of moment happen.
So my thing with the Tucker game today was the defense leveling up from what it was earlier in the series is huge. I think obviously one of those moments where you just go, oh yeah, this is why you go and make that trade at the middle of the season. This is literally precisely what that was for. For me, I think the offense is, and I'm not saying you were doing this, Rohan. I do think this is how some people view it. It's, for me, it's not like, oh, you had 13 points. That's cute. You can't expect that. He doesn't also have to have 13. I do think if he's a guy who scores two in like 30 minutes every time, actually, I think that is an issue. I mean, maybe against the Nets with like no players, that doesn't matter as much. But I like, this is the same thing, and I'm not comparing them necessarily as defenders currently, but like, this kills the Warriors with Draymond. The line for him, the magic number, I think it's like 8. When he scores 8 points this year, the Warriors were really good. And he didn't get there nearly often enough, clearly, for this to be a thing. And when he didn't, they struggled. And there is, especially in the modern NBA, I think there is just a line where it almost doesn't matter how great you are defensively. If you're giving nothing on offense, nothing, just not contributing, you're going to be like neutral at best, and it's going to be hard for your team to consistently win games. And I'm not saying PJ is like a terrible offensive player, but I do think utilizing him solely, if he only takes 2 corner threes a game, no other shots, and plays wing defense, I think he's more likely to look like he looked in the first 2 games of the series, because A, he's not involved, he's not feeling as good, and I think the team is going to look worse, because it's just hard to win if there's guys on offense you can just ignore. And Lopez will have his games where he's like that. It's probably why it's big that Giannis at center is becoming a much more viable thing more quickly than we anticipated. But like, I think PJ scoring 4 points within the arc, 2 for 2 on shooting there, is actually huge. I think he needs to do more of that. Like the Bruce Brown kind of shots where he can cut in and find himself unguarded, like 12 feet from the rim, shoot that. Like, do something offensively. And again, I'm not saying it's incapable, but I do think sometimes his role on the team is minimized too much offensively. You can't have a guy play 30 minutes and score like 4 points consistently. I just don't think it's a recipe for success. So I thought it was great that he made a couple threes. I thought it was even better that he found other ways to contribute on offense as well.
The Nets started this game just not guarding him.
Yeah.
Like they were viewing it as, okay, this is 4-on-5. Cool. You know, PJ Tucker's out there. We don't have to worry about him. And then that changed. And that may change the dynamics of the series for that starting lineup too. That might be where what was a problem before. You know, even if PJ Tucker doesn't have another game like this, you might get a couple of games out of it where you're not having someone else just being double teamed because he's on the floor and the Nets don't care. Like, so that's to your point. And there's ways with even different players, like we've seen this before. Tony Snell is a good example of a guy who gave the Bucks really good minutes. And even you look at his skill set and you're like, oh, you know, he's a good spot up shooter, you know. Or just get him in the corner, get the ball to him, and Tony Snell can knock down shots. And then it'd be the nights where they don't get the ball to Tony Snell in the corner, and he does nothing, and he puts up the line full of zeros. And we all loved Snell, and Snell has value, and Snell had a great season. Honestly, he's a player that I would like some point down the line. I think there's a role player fit for him with the Bucks. It's different to what he used to have. That would work out really nicely. But it was true then, it's true now, that you just can't have a guy out there that isn't going to do anything, and that if it doesn't just kind of break for him, is a zero on offense. It just does not work.
Oh, I thought you had a thought, Rohan. You looked like you were digesting something.
No, he was deep in top, but it's not one he wants to share yet. You know, give it a few minutes and he'll come out with 5 stats that he's...
I was thinking of Tony Snell and every time he tried to dunk on someone.
Like, I was also
those highlights are flowing through my mind right now. So
flowing through your mind. No, I do think, like, yeah, Tucker just needs to be, and you mentioned it could change the series, could change the whole postseason for the Bucks if they're able to unlock a little bit more of him offensively, and just if they can get past Brooklyn, which certainly is not a done deal, you know, maybe this is the starting lineup you just go with. If Tucker can be something offensively, doesn't have to put up 15 a game or even 13 a game or even 10 a game, just has to be a threat, right? The implication, there has to be an implication. He's going to do something. I think if there's not, that's when you can get in dangerous territory. And that's where we were at the first couple of games of this series. So hopefully this is not just, you know, the variance PJ Tucker game. Hopefully it's at least hinting that the Bucks are trying to make teams pay a little bit more if they're just going to completely ignore the guy.
I mean, it's positive regression as well.
That too.
So,
that too. Like, but I just think it has to be more than two shots a game. I think that's a
big yes, part of it. Yes, that is completely fair. He just needs to get more involved in general. I think that's the general point you're trying to get across here. The more involved PJ Tucker is on the offensive end, the more of a threat he becomes for the rest of the starting lineup to also flourish from that.
Precisely.
The other thing just that we haven't mentioned is a very weird thing happened for Tucker coming into this game, which was he was the story. Like, he was at the center of the narrative coming into this game. And, you know, he's the big winner. He had the better game. Was KD shook by not having his personal security there for him in Milwaukee for game four? I don't know. His second half, he may be looking over his shoulder being like, where's my guy? Like, that's, he played a little like that. But that's with PJ having been through all of that, and look, it's not a surprise. Everyone knows what kind of player he is. If you've watched the NBA and watched him play over the years, but it's like, he didn't back down from that then. And he was the one who was energized by that in a positive way, as opposed to Durant. And Durant will have had to have conversations in recent days about his personal security guy storming a court and pushing an opposing player. Like, that's not something that just won't have come up. And KD won't have had to think about between games. So big, big wins game three and game four for PJ Tucker.
PJ Tucker as the primary defender on Kevin Durant in this game. 9 points, 25% from the field for KD.
Listen,
that's with the officials helping KD out too.
Yep.
Sure is. It felt like it too. This was really good stuff from PJ. You can't expect this night in and night out, of course, but series altering game from PJ Tucker. And again, I guess kind of goes without saying, could be postseason altering too, obviously. Kind of goes hand in hand. Adam, what else do we need to cover from this game? What have we not touched on
yet? I think Bud is the only thing that maybe we haven't quite covered.
I have one more thing.
Is your one more thing, Drew?
Yes.
Yeah. We should talk about Drew as well.
I think I was probably subconsciously just trying not to talk about Drew.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that.
But we have to have the conversation, though, because this has been a consistent thing throughout the postseason, right? He doesn't have it offensively, like, especially today, 6 of 16 from the field, 2 of 7 from three. Last game where they won, what was he? 4 of 14 from the field, 1 of 4. Game two, what was he? 6 of 10. That was his best performance in the absolute shellacking of Milwaukee. And if you even go back to game one, what was he? 7 of 19. He doesn't have it offensively. The defense is getting better. I mentioned this. There is only one way to go for him, and that's just going up in terms of off-ball awareness and on-ball, just general Drew Holiday things. Given his assignment might be a little easier now that potentially Kyrie Irving is out.
It might be harder because he might have to take Durant more and deal with the size mismatch. Like, that's actually what we saw when Kyrie went down. I don't know. That could be tougher for him.
True. That's a fair point. So it might even get a little tougher for him. It's just offensively, it's a problem. It really is. If you're looking for a way to energize the Bucks offense, it's to not get sub 40% shooting from their starting point guard. Like I mentioned last episode, as I was going off the freaking rails, that he has to fight the ghost of Isaac Newton, and maybe he has to.
I completely forgot about Isaac Newton. So, he did have 9 assists to 1 turnover this game. That's the one thing I will say. So there are things he's making work offensively. It's his jump shot. And I don't know how either you feel like this. I don't think Drew Holiday has ever been that convincing as a jump shooter. And I was pleasantly surprised by his numbers throughout the regular season. And obviously what we're seeing now is below what he really is. But I'm not entirely shocked that his shot is the thing that's causing him problems. Because again, something that we've seen success with, it happened a couple of times in this game, it's happened in previous games in the series. He goes inside and he uses his body, he's getting great success. Doesn't matter who he's going up against. It's kind of, you know, that's what he should be doing. They need him to make some shots, because otherwise, if we're back to talking about a point guard who's going to make very few shots and, you know, their best chance is using their physicality inside, that really is bringing some deja vu back. And it's not that kind of situation. It's not. But it would be nice to see some shots fall. I predicted at the end of the last pod, I was like, I'd be prepared to bet a lot of money. I then pushed that away. I didn't want to get involved in that. I don't know who listens and how crazy they might be, but that the first play of the game would be specifically designed to get Drew going. Of course it was. My only issue with that is I wouldn't have drawn up a three-pointer for him. I would have drawn up, get him going inside and get his get a shot that's much more in his comfort zone. That's a gimme for him. And try to get him going, try to get his confidence going this way. And I think game five, that may well be the approach again, is to start the game by trying to get Drew going. I try to get him an easier look because the jump shot isn't quite there. Maybe if you can get him enough easy shots inside, you can get some confidence going. They can start to fall. And if they do fall, well, I think the books are in a very strong position. If Drew suddenly finds something close to what his shooting has been throughout the regular season.
I also want to point out the defense of Kyrie Irving has also been very, very, very good. I want to stress that point. He's been absolutely incredible on both ends so far in this series, which is why this is potentially hoping for the best for Kyrie. Obviously, like, this is potentially a big loss for Brooklyn because Kyrie has been bringing it on both ends of the court. Not only is he scoring and getting his own, but he's sort of been neutralizing one of the Bucks' three best players.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the jumper is floaty, wishy-washy with Drew, and it's I think that's fine. He just has to find ways to impact the game with his scoring more, even if the jumper's not falling, even if that is getting inside. I mean, he had the series, he closed out the Pelicans with a He closed out the Trailblazers with a 41-point game where he was 2-for-7 from deep in that postseason in 2018 where he and Dame just sent home Dame and CJ and the rest of them. Like, he can impact the game. He just needs to do it more. And I think, you know, it's great that he's trying to create for others. He did have the 9-assist game, which was good. He hadn't gotten more than 6 in the series. But for him to not have cracked 20 points since game 1 against Miami when he scored exactly 20 points, that's just an issue. It's just a problem. Like, this is a guy they just need to rely on to be able to score more points. And that's the kind of thing where if you're Drew Holiday and you just get this max extension and you're a core building block and you wanted to be here and it's great and everyone feels good about it until we're in the playoffs and you scored 17, 13, 9, and now 14 in the semis against the Brooklyn Nets team that's known for scoring a lot. And obviously, he carries a lot of defensive load. He's created shots for his teammate. He's created very little turnover. He's committed very little turnovers. He hasn't been aggressive enough offensively. And the number that tells you that is he attempted 3 free throws in game 1 and notoriously only made 1 of them. Do you guys know how many he's attempted since?
Is it 2?
It's 0. Drew has not gotten to the
free think throw. Many players in this series, not named Giannis, have been attempting free throws.
Well, not many players in the series are on max deals and known for being scorers who their bread and butter.
There's more of them in this series than there are in most series.
Fair. Well, one of them played 40 seconds.
That's true.
The other two on the other side have certainly attempted more than 3. And I can check Chris, but Chris is more of a jump shooter than Drew. I mean, Drew's go-to, his best look on offense, is I think him bullying guys around the paint and just lofting.
100%.
And he hasn't even been consistently making those shots. I mean, he missed a couple bunnies early in this game. And again, I don't want to just sit here and hate on Drew Holiday. He's just going to have to be better. And I think we'll see. Maybe you get lucky in this series. You don't have to be at your best. I am still assuming for the Bucks, even just to get out of this series, they're just going to need to be better. Because I think they've kind of skated through some good but not great and game threes, not even that, games and gotten wins in the series when I really didn't expect that to be possible. I think Drew is a big key to a lot of this. I think if Drew is putting up 21 points instead of 13 points, a lot of other things end up just looking easier for the Bucks.
I think 20 is a lot for him to be setting as a baseline. I think what his actual tallies were in this game are not that far off what they can be. The big problem in this one is he's 6-16. So he's not being efficient at all and just wasted possessions. It's like it's the same thing we talked about with Giannis. You just can't have them against this team. You can't have them even with players going down if you're going up against Kevin Durant, because there will be games where you'll just get buried for that. But if there's nights where he's having 15 and 10 efficiently, that's fine. Now, there will be, and so far it hasn't been the issue in the last two games, which is how the Bucks win those games. What it is tied to is you need a certain baseline of performance from him and Chris combined. And Chris has been more than kind of doing his share. And that's the key. And that has always been the key, really. It's okay, if Giannis is the guy, you know, you might get some kind of drop-offs for Giannis, particularly if he spends a lot of time at the free throw line in the playoffs. But it's Chris plus your next guy, or Chris plus your next two guys, or if you want to just group everyone not named Giannis in the starting lineup, that's where it comes to. Now, if Chris has a bad game, which could happen, you know, he maybe overdue one now, well, then, yeah, you need a good Drew game or you've got no chance. Like, that goes without saying. But I think...
had our bad Chris game.
Well, yeah, there could be another one, though. I'm not going to say there will only be one in the series.
We've had two.
Did he not have a good game in one of those first two?
No.
Okay, fair enough. Not many books would have a case for that, so it's...
Yeah, he was 13 for 43 in games one and two.
Yeah, okay, that's definitely not good.
Yeah, it wasn't great. But no, I just want to see a little more from Drew. And I get he's a playmaker, and clearly we're now back to Chris and Giannis being the guys with the offensive. I mean, that game three is pretty freaking obvious, but I just want to see a little bit more. I just think it just lightens the load if he's going to be a consistent scorer. And like you mentioned, I mean, really fine if he's going to be 15 and 10 with great defense, which is still, you know, it's obviously very good performance night in and night out in the playoffs. You can't have the 15 coming on 19 shots or even 14 shots if you're going to be 4 for 14 or 6 for 16. Like, that at that point, it's like, okay, this something's got to give here. Like, that's just not enough from Drew Holiday.
What did you think about the conversation Rowan and I had on this in the last episode, which was particularly if they are, as you know, a conscious decision, they're going to Giannis and Chris, the part of his struggles now might be finding his spot in there. Like, I think that is also part of why I'm like, okay, 9 assists, 1 turnover, 14 points, wish they were more efficient, but that's pretty good given where things are. I think today was an improvement for him, and it got better as the game went on too. It felt like he maybe moved a little further away from the jumper. But do you think it's possible that part of the issue we're seeing with him is they're still working this out and they're now playing in a different way than they did in the regular season, and he's like, okay, well, this is new and I'm not sure exactly what I do here, where I'm to be here, just how all this works?
Yeah, I think that's definitely it. I think that's compounded by, you look at a lot of the rotations, it's been he and Chris are the one unit outside of starters, and then Giannis and guys is the other one. So, you know, even in the, when Giannis is off, or even in the non-starter minutes, the other lineups, he's still not, like, at this point, he's rarely ever the primary ball handler and looked at as the offensive load. I mean, he's handling the ball, but he's rarely ever looked at as the guy who needs to score. And I just think in the regular season, it felt like we had a lot more, you know, where lineups where it's Drew and maybe Brooke or maybe even Giannis and he's handling more, or just Drew and more bench guys. And thankfully, it's good we're not seeing those lineups. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to see Drew and four bench guys. But I do think some of the opportunities where it was very obvious that he needs to be scoring and facilitating, some of those lineups are just gone now, and that's the playoffs. And I do think it is a little bit of an odd process for the Bucks going along here to figure out you know, when is who doing what? And maybe that's another reason that, you know, if Giannis cuts out five or six possessions that aren't great, maybe that's four possessions that Drew could be trying to take a shot with instead. But I think that's a lot of it, is trying to figure out this give and take of like who is exactly doing what. And it's difficult. It's the difficult thing, you know, on any team with two guys who are floating roughly around being number two, and especially so when it's the Bucks, where your number two may end up being number one late in games because your number one doesn't have the reliable jumper and everything else. So on a team that already kind of has a muddled offensive hierarchy, I think it makes it extra weird for Drew to be the interloper. Obviously, Chris and Giannis have been together for several years now, trying to figure out where he fits in exactly.
I just think one of the things with Drew is, one of the most important things is that he's helped to ensure that the Bucks do have a number two most nights. Like, it's not the nights where it's like, it's Giannis and who? Because that is what would happen if Chris was off last year and you're then looking to Bledsoe. Okay, Bledsoe had his moments. Let's not be unfair. But he had different kind of moments that were very far from positive too. So that's kind of, this is a team where, not at the moment, because injuries are giving the Bucks some real breaks, but if you're playing the Nets at full strength, well, you'd need to be like, okay, this is a first option, second option, third option, all three guys are firing. That's not what they're facing right now. And the reality is, maybe the Bucks could win it all if they can just ensure that they have a first and a second option who both perform every night. That doesn't have to be Chris every night. It doesn't have to be Drew. They can alternate that between them. But there is a path where the Bucks can get through this series and they could go all the way if they can just make sure they don't have no-show nights for both of those guys, or if Giannis has an off night, which is also possible, that those two guys are there ready to step up. You just need to have two guys every night. And I think that is something that Drew has helped a lot with. He hasn't had to do it the last few nights, but your point is completely accurate, because if he is needed in game five, well, he has to step up, because beyond him, the Bucks don't have many options. So it will be nice to know that he's playing at a level where he's already there. He's ready to give those points just in case they're needed.
Yeah, I'd like to see it. Rohan, do you have Drew thoughts?
No, I was just going to say the guy who's in charge of making sure all these pieces fit together is nice. Your old friend Mike Budenholzer. I guess our friend, he's still here. Adam, I know you had thoughts on Bud. What do you want to get into?
I was mostly, as I always am with Bud, I'm more curious to hear your thoughts, because I know a lot of the Bud feelings. I mean, my take on it, and I'm, again, curious for your response to it, is I just think the Bucks were very clearly trying some different stuff. And that is one of the key things that we've asked for over and over again, is let's just make adjustments. If something's not working, let's try something else. I feel like they came to this game with some ideas. They worked with them. Some worked well, some didn't. For example, we touched on that all-time terrible spacing possession earlier in the game. But in getting to a place where you're doing that, you're already, you know, you're putting a different idea out there. There were the wrong five guys on the floor at that time to work with it. Was Brook Lopez suddenly the ball handler in that possession? Sure. Like, none of this is perfect.
I want an entire narrative form piece done on that one possession, because my goodness, that was something. That was one of the strangest plays I've seen from the Milwaukee Bucks in the last like 5 years.
That's an oral history contender.
Yeah,
it is.
Bucks win a championship, we can all laugh. We can revisit it, because like remember that possession in game four against the Nets where we all stood together and we laughed.
It can be its own binge the Bucks episode. I agree. I think especially early on, I think the Bucks lost focus in the second half and reverted to some old habits. But early on, I thought the offensive scripting, first off, it felt like there was some offensive scripting. And we know a very Bud thing is like, we don't practice a lot, just go out there and flow into stuff and everything else. Obviously, I know the sidelines out of bounds plays that aren't in late games are really, really good. I get that. We just don't see a ton of scripted stuff like that in the Bucks, you know, play-to-play offense. There's a lot of possessions that just kind of go and, you know, let it fly, which clearly there are some limitations to that philosophy, but early on it felt like it wasn't like that. The Bucks were, it reminded me of the four games against Philly and Brooklyn near the end of the regular season, where Milwaukee was flowing into actions over and over again. Giannis is cutting off ball. Giannis is screening, dribble handoffs. Chris is moving around off ball a little bit, or at least running off screens, and they're finding guys in the corner and making the extra pass. Although every Bucks extra pass is somehow to Brook Lopez, not in the corner shooting a three. I don't know how he's always, and I get it, still it's an okay shot. Why does it always have to be Brook Lopez? The guy, I get, it's probably something defenses kind of hope for when the Bucks do make the extra pass. But
there was actually one incident of that today where the extra pass went to Brook, but then Brook decided he was going to make an extra pass, which rarely happens. And it was to, was that Tucker or was it Pat in the corner that made a tree? I think it was Pat. Okay, well.
It was Tucker. It was the play where he went for the layup, wasn't it? Where he pump fake KD out of his shoes? Or is that a different
play? Yes, sorry, you're right. That is the play. And I was like, wow, Brook made the pass.
It's shocking.
But this is something I've talked about a lot. People who've listened to Win at Six over the years will have heard me in the Bud era, because that's Hawks Bud. That is Hawks Bud. And this game was Hawks Bud, where everything is inside out. Yep. Everything is inside out because it's a really natural way to get ball movement going. It's just kind of, it becomes much more intuitive. And I'm certain there were conversations, given the stats that we saw publicly, that were going around about, you know, least passes
ever.
Right. I was pondering, I was like, did I see ever? And yeah, I did see ever.
By a lot, like by a wild margin. This is only in the tracking data era. So since whatever year, in the last 10 or 20 years, but it was like 2.05 per possession or something. And then the next closest was, of course, one of those Rockets teams. And it was like 2.35. And then there's like a bunch of teams in 2.3 and then some in 2.4. So it was like, they had the least passes by far. I think that was just Brooklyn series, but or maybe even the one game. I don't remember, but the ball was not moving, basically.
But that is the thing where everyone could see that was a problem. Beyond, I think it's generally been a problem with the Bucks under Bud. They haven't done as much of that as they should. And I think part of that has been that Brook isn't the most willing or maybe the best passer out of the post. And part of that is, for a lot of Bud's time, Brook hasn't even been in the post. No one's been there. So you can't really play inside out. They found ways to make it work. And I think that was really important. And Giannis embraced that. Chris embraced that. And it's just, yeah, let's drive, but let's use the drive as a platform for something else. And let's get the ball moving and let's create good shots. And it's so simple when they do that. I don't know why they don't do it every game. They really should for the rest of the series now that they figure that out, because, you know, for all the things that the Nets can do and I'm sure will do to counter the Bucks, if the Bucks just move the ball much better to create better shots, they're going to make more and they're going to be really difficult to stop. Like, the Bucks have to make it tough to defend them. And it is not tough to defend static players, static ball, and, you know, Giannis playing ISO from the 3-point line. You're defending yourself at that point. So that's the thing for me where it's like, okay, that was a real conscious effort and it paid off in a big way. And you might just have unlocked some things too in the process. It's like, that's how you get your role players firing. That's how the bench looks like, you know, a group of capable players. Because even though it isn't what happened in this game, say what Pat did and what PJ did, that formula can be the exact same formula that gets us another Bryn Forbes game like we saw against the Heat. It's like, keep playing like that. It doesn't have to be those guys. You have someone else who could get hot, could actually get much hotter than either of those two could from there and really win another game by himself.
The other thing I really liked that Bud did, and I just love that we're going into game five and like we've discovered a thing that seems to work here. It could have been done a little quicker, but I do think this was a well-coached game by Bud. I love all of the defensive attention that went to KD as soon as Kyrie went down, basically. Like, they didn't always double him, but they sent help pretty reliably, but just not reliably enough to make it too predictable and too easy for him to beat. And sometimes, I mean, I remember one of them, Chris kind of just like jogged over like 5 feet from him and put his hands up. And I was like, that's not really that useful. I think it was like, maybe it was just a show double, like a fake double. I don't know. It didn't accomplish a whole lot, but you know, KD kept passing. KD passed out of it a lot. And I think that's almost always a win. Like, I mean, we know we've seen Bruce Brown make 1,000 floaters and Blake make 1,000 threes, but on the average Nets role player night, that's pretty much always a win. And it's, you know, it wasn't a super advanced concept. It was, I mean, we all saw the box and one against Steph Curry in the 19 finals, but I just thought it was nice to see immediately that adjustment of like, oh, their offense is just KD. Like, we're going to make that guy's life a lot harder and see if anyone can step up. And clearly no one could in this game.
It's impossible to argue that he hasn't gotten better as the series has gone on, given it's gotten a lot more simpler for Budenholzer, which makes it a little easier. But that shouldn't take away from the fact that he has gotten better and this Bucks team has gotten better, clearly, as they have now tied up this series 2-2 in the Eastern Conference semifinals. Do we have anything else we really need to touch on this post-game pod here?
If you got somewhere you need to be?
No.
1.5 plus hours in, and Adam is like, I'm just getting warmed up here.
Exactly. No, I don't really. I mean, I think we've pretty much covered it all. Like, almost to a man going down the roster, unless we've got assistant coaches we'll talk about. I think we're... What are we expecting?
Axel Toupin hit a three? Like, that's something he can do on a basketball court? Like,
well, maybe I have somewhere I need to be now.
I genuinely did not know what he was capable of doing on the offensive end, and now I know he can occasionally hit a three.
Occasionally meaning once. Game five, I need to see this level of, like, methodical execution that the last two games have started with. I just need to see it for, like, basically the whole game, and you know, hopefully the result is out of hand and the Bucks are doing really well and maybe they don't need to in the fourth quarter as much. But I, even if it doesn't work, even if you still lose the game, which I find it hard to believe at this point with this Nets team, but I need to see it taken very seriously, because I do think this is, like, I mean, it always is. Game five is that Magic's quote this year, that game five is always the one that determines the series. But it's true. I mean, obviously if you can go in and take home court back and set up a win and go to the next round game and five serve, I mean, that's huge. Barclays is not exactly a great home court advantage, but I need to see this game five be treated basically like game three in a way, not in terms of
it needs to be treated like an elimination game.
Yes, really, but does. Also, like, let's see another 43-minute Giannis game. You know what I mean? Like, let's go all out and try to avoid going seven and giving more chances for these Nets guys to come back. And we don't even know if Kyrie's going to be out, but you assume.
The latest update on Kyrie is that, according to Rachel Nichols, he left the building using crutches and a walking boot.
It makes sense. I mean, that is basically went 90 degrees the wrong way. So not super surprising, but I just need to see an all-out game, like at max effort, smart execution, everything else. So I think it's going to be a great test for the Bucks, who, you know, survived a haymaker that could have certainly broken them. It broke us in a lot of ways. And that was game two and a lot of games.
There's audio evidence to prove it.
It's there. The tapes are out there.
More in one person's case than another's. But hey, I say some stuff too.
It's true. Can confirm. But it's going to be huge. It's going to be a huge test of, like, you weathered a storm, but now can the counterattack really go all the way? Because really, winning the two at home after getting blown out in Barclays like that in game two, it's a comeback, but you just got to where you started. So now, can you actually
best of three.
Lead? Can you take the lead in the series? So I think the entire vibe of the game is going to be fascinating to me.
Yep, start three strong, series, they win the series.
Yeah,
that's yep. It's as simple. And if they don't, the idea of this series going seven doesn't inspire great confidence in me. The idea of maybe it's just the thought of having to sit through a game seven, where like every Giannis free throw trip could be decisive. Don't want to do it. But I think if the Bucks are to win this series, I think game five is one they're going to have to get. I think the Bucks' best chance of doing this will come in just, okay, the Nets have been weakened and they're ready to crumble. So let's get on with it. Like, let's go out and do it in game five, and then you've got it in your own hands to wrap the thing up in game six. If you keep going and defending home court and we get to a game seven, maybe that's just where I've seen too much stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Too much stuff over the years to really get optimistic on that. But if they can come out of the blocks fast and do some early damage, win game five, I think the Bucks will be going to the conference finals.
Okay, so do we have a score prediction? Wow, I'm all over the place.
I think we better go to you first at this. Yeah, if you got any,
Mr. Palindrome.
You say that, like the palindrome's done. It's four. Well,
so they're gonna start like
new palindrome.
I don't have enough knowledge of like mathematical sequences, like unless they're gonna win by like Fibonacci margins or something. Like I don't know. You're probably better equipped for this.
Maybe new pattern starts here. They flip the score, so game five is 115-107 Milwaukee.
Okay.
Wow. I'm going to say 126, just Bucks in six. And I think the offense finally gets uncorked if they play smarter throughout.
Yeah, just
doesn't matter.
It does matter because the Nets 130. The Nets could score like 150 or something.
126-111.
I'd love the optimism of the book sniffing 120 any time in this series. It's just something's not there for that right now. Should be. I mean, there's no reason for it not to be. It's just it isn't. And I think they played quite well. They shot well tonight, made a lot of threes, and we still ended up at 107. So 110-106.
Oh, close game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think mine was super optimistic. I don't like guessing the score. I'm not good at it. We all know this from the
behind. We all used to do this back in the day. And Rowan knows that this was something that didn't work, both because a lot of people were terrible at it.
I will say, I was the best at that, too.
I'll go back and check the tape. If you're gonna,
I was consistently near the top of the leaderboards. I will say that.
We've gone from I was the best at that to I was consistently near the top of the sixth person. I heard near. We'll check the tape on this too.
I know some people in the know who can get access to those tapes very quickly. And we might have an update on the game five pod.
Am I the only one that gets reprimanded for my takes? Is that it?
If Ty said that, I'd be on Ty's case too.
Okay,
you're the only one who gets it on here. The rest of us get it on Twitter for what you say on here. That's called the universe balancing itself out.
Yes, everyone continue to send your tweets to everyone except for me. Just send me the positive ones, except for the ones where it's like I'm raising your heart rate and actually giving like actual health problems. Actually, no, keep sending me those. I want to know if I'm actually causing bad things to happen to people. That was a
rein in your behavior then?
Yes. I feel like I've been more controlled on this episode.
The score line, I think, did it for you.
Yeah.
The question is, if those scores were reversed, like, would you just be shouting from the get-go?
It's like the Bucks. We need to see him now, like, make real progress. Like, this was an easy one. Now we need to see in a real test, Rohan.
Yeah, I'm stuck between whether I'm actually doing better or I'm just completely broken and I just nothing can faze me. So,
just like I don't want to see game seven, I don't want to see us get to a point where Rohan might need to let loose again.
Well, we'll see what happens on the game. What game is it going to be? Five? Game five. Five. Which is going to be on some
Tuesday?
Tuesday, I think.
Yeah,
right?
I think so.
I think they're every other day now for the rest of the series, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, so Tuesday at a time that has yet to be determined, I believe. We will be back with you for another post-game pod then. But for now, I'll say thank you for listening to this Eurostep Win in Six crossover pod here on the Eurostep Podcast Network and on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. If you did enjoy the show, make sure to leave a rating on Apple or wherever you can. Make sure you're subscribed on your podcast platform of choice. Tell your family and friends about the show. Stay safe, everyone. Go Bucks. And we will talk to you next time.